Darling thought he had time to get his friend from the water.
"How come the bird was so stupid?" Harry asked.
He seemed to have forgotten that the duckling was actually a boy in Peter's story.
"Don't he know the pond only shows what's put in it?"
This didn't really make sense, but we all knew what Harry meant. A few of the others nodded. Charlie hadn't forgotten the duckling was actually a boy. He pressed his face against my chest, like he was trying to climb inside my skin, trying to find a place where he could be safe from the story. Only Charlie and I seemed to know it wasn't to end well, and only I knew the story was meant for me. Charlie was dead scared of the crocodile pond, and he was right to be. Those beasts could gobble a little one like him in one bite.
"Haven't I said he was a foolish little duckling?" Peter said, responding to Harry's question. "Everyone knows we stick together in the forest."
"If you go out alone, you won't come back," a few of the boys said together. "'Sep Jamie," Fogg said.
"Yeah, 'sep Jamie," Nod said.
"Nothing in the forest would be dumb enough to try and hurt Jamie,"
Peter said, with a fierce kind of pride.
That pride would have made me swell a little were it not for Charlie's small voice.
"But what about the duckling?"
"Right you are, Charlie," Peter said. "That little duckling crept back to the so-still pond where Mr. Crocodile waited. He gathered all his courage and looked into the water and saw his friend there, so very close to those watching eyes."
"I thought this was a ghost story," Billy said. He didn't seem much impressed by the tale of the little duckling. "Where's the ghost?"
"Aye," said Jonathan. "I thought a proper ghost story would have bloody white creepers covered in chains and all."
"If you don't shut it, we'll never get to the ghost bit," Peter said, temper snapping in his eyes.
"That's all right," I thought.
"Charlie and me, we don't need to hear the end of this story. We don't need to know how the crocodile chomped the little duckling into its jaws while the boy cried for his mamma, because Charlie and me, we already see it."
Peter cleared his throat, so all the boys would pay attention again. There was no thought of leaving, of doing something else, of taking Charlie somewhere he wouldn't hear. And the boys who were bored wouldn't leave either. It was Peter's island, Peter who'd brought us here, and in the back of every boy's mind was some form of the same thought. He could send me back if he wanted. They didn't know that Peter wouldn't ever let anyone leave. Once you came to the island, you stayed on the island. That was the rule. You stayed there forever. And none of them wanted to go back, for they'd all been alone or as good as, running from the smell of ale and dirty straw and the fist that made your teeth fall out. Anything Peter had on offer was better than that, even if there were monsters here. Except, I thought, maybe for Charlie. Charlie didn't belong. Charlie might have a brother. A brother who teased about the ghost in the wardrobe, but who might look out for him too. And maybe Charlie had been that little duckling following a grasshopper the day we found him. Maybe we should have just turned him around so he could find his way back to the path, instead of taking him away with us.
The duckling reached for his friend in the water, and his friend reached back. Just as the duckling was about to grasp hands with the other boy, his fingers somehow slipped past and into the water.
"How can a bird have fingers?" Harry asked Billy, and Billy shushed him at the look in Peter's eye.
The sneaking, peeking crocodile eyes hadn't moved, so the little duckling thought there must still be time to save his friend. He reached in the water, and the other boy reached back, and his face was scared, but their hands didn't touch. The little duckling knew then his friend was trapped beneath the surface, and that meant he would be eaten for certain. No wonder the crocodile hadn't lumbered from the pond to chase the duckling, for his meal was only a snap and a clap away, no need to run after little boys on land.
"Here now, where'd the boy come from?" Harry asked.
The little duckling thought and thought, and then he dragged a large branch to the pond and pushed it in for his friend to grab. It splashed and crashed, and the old fat croc blinked his eyes, but he didn't move, and the duckling's friend was still stuck beneath the water, his face as pale as the white moon. The duckling saw a vine on a tree, and he ran to the tree and tugged with all his might, always checking over his shoulder to make sure the croc wasn't about. But the croc just stayed where he was put, like he was sleeping with his eyes open. The vine came loose with a ripping noise, and the duckling tumbled back, rolling so fast, that he almost went right into the pond with the friend he was trying to save. And what would happen then? Who would save them if they both were trapped under the surface? He threw the vine in the water and told his friend to grab hold of it. And he ran away from the pond as fast as he could, holding his end of the vine and hoping he was pulling his friend from the reach of the crocodile's teeth. After a while, he looked back and saw he had gone far from the water and the sneaking, peeking eyes, but he was all alone. The end of the vine trailed along behind him, wet and dirty and friendless. The little duckling cried then, for he was scared of the croc and the water, and of being by himself in the woods, and he just wanted his mamma, just wanted her to come and put him under her wing and take him home. Peter looked at me, and I knew this last part was for me. A warning, maybe, or a foretelling of the future. Charlie started to shake then. He couldn't bear it another second, and I turned him around so his head was on my shoulder, just like he was my little duckling, and I was his mamma, putting him under my wing. I gave Peter a look that said, "Do your worst." But though he was a foolish duckling, he was still, deep down, a brave one too. He wouldn't leave his friend behind. The little duckling decided finally he must dive into the water and push his friend out, and the thought of this made him tremble all over and made the downy yellow fuzz on his head stand up. He stood on the shore of the pond, watching that sneaking, creeping crocodile who was so still the duckling almost thought he wasn't even alive. Just as the duckling had worked up enough courage to leap into the water, he heard something, something so far away but so longed for that he was sure he imagined it. It sounded like Mama, quacking and quacking his name. The little duckling forgot about his friend in the water and turned and called for her. And she called back, and now his heart was full and happy, and he started away from the pond, running across the clearing, and shouting for her. Everything would be all right now that his mamma was here. But oh, that peeking, sneaking crocodile, he knew his time had come. The little duckling's back was turned, but if he had looked over his shoulder, he would have seen that old crocodile moving fast now, faster than anyone would have thought possible. His tail whipped that giant monster's body through the water in a trice, and though he splashed as he clambered on shore, the little duckling didn't hear. He could only hear one thing, the voice of his mamma. Charlie trembled all over, his body vibrating against my chest, and he covered his ears with his little hands. He didn't want to hear because he already knew, and so did I. The other boys leaned forward, their eyes shining in the afternoon light, for Peter had them well and truly caught now. "And what do you think happened then?" Peter asked, for he never lost a chance to perform for the audience. "He got eaten," Harry said, "and he turned into a ghost." I sniggered a little at the look on Peter's face, for although it was obvious where the story was heading, he clearly felt that Harry's delivery left something to be desired. The little duckling's mamma broke through the trees and saw him running to her. And she saw, too, the crocodile behind, his eyes so hungry and red. She shrieked and reached for her duckling, but it was too late, far too late. That sneaking, creeping crocodile had hold of the duckling's leg, and the little duckling was too surprised to cry out, too surprised to do anything at all. His mother, she was quacking and squawking as the little duckling was dragged away, but she should have kept a better eye, shouldn't she? Isn't that what mammas are supposed to do? "Don't remember our mamma," said Nod, and Fog nodded his head up and down in agreement. "I do," Billy said, and it didn't seem the memory brought him any particular joy. "I do," said Charlie, but it was a tiny whisper just for me. "She used to rock me and sing to me and hold me so tight. That mother duck, she ran after the crocodile, but he disappeared under the water of the pond, taking the little duckling with him. Now, you might think that a little duckling turned into a ghost that haunts that old crocodile pond, Peter said, his eyes hard and bright as he glanced at the shivering Charlie in my arms.
Didn't he? Harry asked.
Peter shook his head side to side, a long, slow no that had all the boys peering at him in confusion.
What's all this duck business about, then, if he didn't turn into a ghost? Where's the bloody ghost in the ghost story?
Harry asked. But there was no rancour in his voice, just confusion. The mother duckling stood at the shore of the pond, weeping and weeping for her little lost one. Her tears were so great and so many that the waters of the pond rose and flooded around her feet and ankles, and she sank deep into the mud there until the water covered her to her knees. On and on she wept, for she knew it was all her fault for letting her little boy get lost in the first place. After a very long time, her tears ran dry, but by then her legs had turned into stems and her yellow hair into the petals of a flower, and so she stands there until this day, crouched over the crocodile pond, hoping forever to see the face of her little duckling again. And sometimes, if you go to the crocodile pond at night, you can hear her voice on the wind, crying his name. Peter said this last bit very quietly and dramatically. I didn't know what the rest of the boys would make of this tale. They mostly looked confused and slightly disappointed. But I knew that Peter meant it for me. But was I the little duckling's mamma in the story? Or was I supposed to return him to her before something happened to Charlie? I wasn't sure. Peter's eyes were dark and full of blood. But the wet on my shoulder was from Charlie's quiet tears.
Chapter 3. After that strange little interlude, the boys were full of energy and ready to run. So Peter decided we ought to set off for the pirate camp, though the sun was lowering. As usual, my objections were overruled. "The sun will be up for a while longer," Peter said. "Anyhow, the boys are already gone." It was true. As soon as Peter had given them leave to go, all the boys had collected their supplies and weapons, following the lead of Nod and Fogg, who were always happy to order the new boys about. Then the twins whooped and hollered and ran into the woods, and most of the others had followed them with varying degrees of enthusiasm. Del's face was less pale than usual, and I could tell he still felt some lingering pride at having fought Nipoff at lunch. Maybe he would make it. Maybe he wouldn't die slowly, coughing out blood. Maybe. Everyone left except Nip, who was still passed out where I'd left him, and Peter and Charlie and me. Charlie had one hand attached to the tail of my coat, and the thumb of his other hand was stuffed in his mouth. Peter eyed the little boy with distaste, though after the story he told, Peter could hardly expect Charlie to scamper happily after the others.
"Go and kick Nip," Peter told Charlie. "If he doesn't get up, he'll have to stay here on his own while we raid the pirates."
Charlie looked up at me, which I could tell bothered Peter no end. He was used to having his wishes granted without question. "I'll do it," I said. I didn't want Nip to wake up swinging and punch Charlie in the face, although I was pretty certain that was precisely the goal Peter had in mind. "I'm not minding him while you're about it," Peter said, just as if Charlie weren't there at all. "It's fine," I said. "Come with me, Charlie." Peter frowned, this outcome apparently not at all what he'd wanted. "Go on after the others," I said to Peter, and his frown became fierce. Not only was I taking the risk of harm away from Charlie, but I'd just dismissed Peter like one of the other boys, like he was ordinary. And Peter never wanted to be ordinary. "I don't want to go yet," Peter said. "As you please," I said, and hid my smile as I turned away. Charlie kept his hand on my clothes, but as we approached Nip, he tugged at the hem. I glanced down at him and he shook his head at me.
You don't want to get closer to Nip?
Charlie's thumb popped out of his mouth.
He scares me.
Do you want to go back to Peter?
Charlie shook his head no again, but didn't offer any explanation at this time. I had a fair idea that Peter's ghost story had taken some of the shine off the other boy for Charlie.
Just stay here, all right? I'll just go give Nip a kick and come right back for you.
Charlie shook his head, his eyes big and blue and full of feelings he couldn't put into words, but I could see the story of the lost duckling swimming around in them.
I promise I'll be back, I said. I don't want you to get hurt if Nip wakes up like an angry bear, right? And you can see me all the time I'm gone.
Charlie turned this over in his mind, and finally nodded and let go of my clothes. He snagged one hand firmly in his own shirt hem, and put his other thumb back in his mouth. Peter stood near the fire where we'd left him, his brow creased as he watched us. Whatever trouble Peter seemed to think Charlie might cause, it was nothing in my mind to the trouble Nip would cause. He was that kind of boy, the kind who'd always be slugging the others and taking their food, and generally disturbing the peace. Not that there was so much peace, really, with more than a dozen boys about, but the roughhousing was usually in a friendly spirit. I'd seen Nip's eyes when he went for Del at lunch. There was a piggy kind of meanness in them, a cruelty that didn't have a place in our little band of lost boys. At least I thought so, though clearly Peter didn't, else he wouldn't have chosen him. That made two mistakes Peter had made in the last collection, Charlie and Nip. I knew what he thought he'd get in Charlie, a sweet little toy to play with. I wondered what he thought he'd get out of Nip. All this was drifting around in my brain as I stood over the prone boy, and so I didn't do any of the things I might have done with one of the others. Shake him awake, or roll him over so that the sun on his face made him open his eyes. No, I did exactly as Peter had told Charlie to do. I kicked him. I kicked him good and hard in the ribs, and if I didn't crack any bones, it wasn't for lack of trying. Nip rolled over with a cry and came to his knees. His face was smudged with dirt and ash from the fire, and his eyes were reddened from the coals. It took him a moment to realize where he was, what had happened, and what I was doing there. When he did, he stood up, staggered up, really, and his hand went to his head like my last blow was still ringing there. None of this stopped him from putting up his fists in clear invitation. I hadn't wanted to fight him earlier, so I'd sent Nip off with Nod and Fog. Now I wanted to fight. It had been boiling in me all day. First the dream, and Peter's insistence on a raid that would probably kill half the boys. Then Nip's bullying of Del and that thrice-bedamned story about the duckling that Peter had told to terrify Charlie half to death. I'd been holding back so as not to scare the little boy who trailed behind me. But now Nip offered a chance to beat him good and bloody, and I was going to take it. It wasn't fair of me. Not really. Nip was about the same height as me, and he had more weight on him. But he was still staggering stupid from before. It wasn't an even fight. I didn't care if it was even or not. I just wanted to beat the piss out of somebody. So Nip put his fists up, and I smiled at him. And when I smiled, he dropped his fists a little and asked, "What are you smiling about?" His nose was broken before he realized why I was smiling. Then his cheekbone, I heard it crack. Then I kicked in his stomach, and he staggered back, puking his guts up. I would have done more. I could have done more. The red haze was riding hard in my blood, and I wanted to peel his eyelids back and pop his eyeballs out. I wanted to put Nip down for good. But then I heard Charlie's tiny gasp as the bigger boy retched out what little he'd eaten that day. When I looked back, I saw his eyes as giant pools of blue and a face as white as a seabird's wing feather. There was blood on my knuckles from where I'd busted Nip's nose open. But I knelt and opened my arms to Charlie and he ran into them. I felt that hard anger receding. Not disappearing, for it never disappeared entirely, but waited for the right feeding to bring it back to life. Nip retched again.
his breath harsh and shallow. He started to speak, but I stopped him.
"You leave off the other boys, you hear?" I said. "Else there'll be more of the same for you."
Nip's eyes narrowed at me, full of resentment.
"What's it to you? Who do you think you are anyway? Peter picked me himself."
"Don't go thinking that makes you special," I said. "They were all the same. They all thought they were special, but only I was. I was first, and none of them could take that from me. I was first, and best, and last, and always. Peter could do without them, but not without me. Never without me. You're here to be part of our band, and we all work together here."
"I'm not taking orders from you," Nip said.
"Then you can leave," I said.
"Go live with the pirates and see how you like that."
"Try and make me,"
Nip said, and sneered. His face was spattered with blood from his nose, and his left cheekbone moved in a very wrong way when he talked. He must have been full of vinegar to keep gabbing at me through that.
"Don't see how you can when you're playing nanny."
Charlie was nothing to do with this, and I wasn't going to let this new boy bring him in.
"I can kill you with one hand," I said, and let Nip see it in my eyes.
"Can you really?" Charlie whispered in my ear. I nodded once, and wondered if Charlie would be scared of me now. But instead he gripped my neck tighter, like he knew for certain I was strong enough to look after him, to keep him safe. And I was. Nip watched me, his mean little eyes going from my face to the back of Charlie's head resting on my shoulder. I saw him working something out that I didn't care for. All this happened while Peter watched and waited by the dying embers of the fire. The sun's slanting rays were longer and longer by the minute. I wasn't keen on starting off after the others in the dark.
"Leave off the other boys and do as you're told," I said to Nip. "Or else you'll pay for it."
I turned away then, for he was the sort of boy who would learn his lesson only after hard knocks, so there wasn't any point in standing there bandying words with him all day.
"Now can we go a-raiding?"
Peter asked in a sing-song voice, skipping around me like a child asking his father for a sweet.
"If we don't catch up to the rest soon, they'll get eaten by the many-eyed without you there."
"Nod and Fog can look out for them," I said mildly, though I privately agreed. Nod and Fog could take orders, but too often they got caught up in their own concerns to take proper care of the other boys. "Besides, they'll stop at the cave for the night before they get to the fields."
"Then let's go,"
Peter cried, and ran into the woods after the others. Nip had pushed up to his feet. He looked a right mess and none too steady. I hoped he fell off a cliff or wandered into the mouth of a bear on the way, and saved me some future trouble, for he was staring at me with that trouble in his eyes.
"Are you coming or not?" I shouted to him.
He didn't say a word to me, only went after Peter. Charlie had picked up his head to watch the bigger boy.
"Maybe he'll get lost," he whispered hopefully.
"Maybe he will," I said and rumpled his hair.
"You don't like Nip, do you?"
"He tried to take Del's food,"
Charlie said as I placed him on the ground. He immediately grabbed the hem of my coat as we went toward the path after the others.
"He would have eaten mine if you weren't there."
He understood this instinctively. Understood that because he was small, there would always be those who tried to use their size against him. Nip and Peter weren't far ahead of us on the trail, and I didn't fancy the four of us walking together like a happy family.
"Do you want me to show you something, Charlie?"
"What?"
he asked.
"A shortcut," I said.
"A shortcut to what?"
"I know where they'll stop for the night," I said. "And anyway, all those boys don't know how to be quiet when they're together. We'll hear them before we see them."
"And we won't have to walk with Nip,"
Charlie said, his eyes lit up at the thought of a shortcut, a secret for only him and me. That was the magic the island had,
Rocks to scramble over and trees to climb and mermaid lagoons to swim in and, yes, pirates to fight. I didn't want to take the boys there today, but fighting pirates was some of the best fun you could have. The whole island was a great wide playground for boys like us to run in. To make secret places, to go where we wished and when we wanted, with no adults to stop us or make us mind. And Charlie, he needed that magic. I was pretty certain that we'd taken this little duckling from a mamma who loved him. Peter didn't think very much of mothers. It had been far too long since he'd had one to remember, and most of the boys had the kind of mothers you'd wanted to forget. Peter said mine was like that too, that she'd harangued and beaten me. But I didn't remember her. I didn't remember too much from before, only flashes, and sometimes the songs that made my heart ache and Peter frown. I knew the boys would stop at Bear Cave for the night, so named because the first time Peter and I went there we found the bones of a huge bear. Peter had loved that snarling skull so much that he mounted it on the wall, and we dug a fire pit beneath it like some altar to an ancient god. When the fire was lit, the flames played strangely on the skull, making it seem that at any moment it would live again, devouring us all. I spared a thought for how those dancing shadows would frighten Charlie, then let it pass. I couldn't keep things from scaring him, only from harming him. The boys would stop at the bear cave because there was good cover there, and it was well before the fields of the many-eyed. Nod and Fog, for all that they both seemed fearless, were both terrified of the many-eyed. I'd never shame them for this, nor would anyone on the island with sense. Even Peter, who liked to tease and play on the other's fears, wouldn't mock this. The boys wouldn't try to cross the fields without Peter or me, and it was pure foolishness to try at night in any case. That was asking to get eaten. Charlie followed me off the path and into the dark thicket of trees. It was cooler away from the main walk where the sun beat down on the exposed trail. Here, under the canopy of leaves, the small flies didn't buzz and bite, and the shifting shadows welcomed those with a heart to explore. Little soft things scurried in the undergrowth, rabbits and field mice and miniature foxes with overlarge ears and watchful eyes. I liked the soft loam of the earth here, the wet green smell of the ferns mixed with the pungent sweetness of fallen fruit. The trees acred over our heads far above, the long, broad leaves tangling there like they stood arm in arm, protecting us. "I like it here," Charlie said, kneeling to push his fingers into the dirt. He laughed when several fat pink earthworms poked their heads blindly through the surface, waving about like they were sniffing for an intruder. All we needed to do was cut through the forest, and we would come out alongside the rocky cliff that led up to Bear Cave. The footing was narrow there, but Charlie was small, and I'd climbed it so many times I could do it in my sleep. We'd easily beat Peter and Nip there if they stayed to the path, for the path they followed twisted and rambled all through the forest and countryside before stopping at the point of Bear Cave, where the mountains met the plains. And Nip wasn't altogether in his mind and body either. The memory of his broken cheekbone moving out of time with the rest of his jaw made me smile to myself. Charlie ran ahead of me, giggling and flushing birds out of their nests in the ferns so that they chirped angrily at him. It was the first time I'd seen him free and happy since he'd arrived on the island. When night fell and the woods grew dark, he came back to me. It didn't feel that this was because he was scared, just a little unsure where to walk. Bigger animals moved in the dark around us. We heard the soft pad of hooves and spotted the gleam of white antlers. Later, we heard a bear snuffling towards us, big and broad, and smelling of the last thing he killed. Bears mostly left us boys alone, but the reek of this one warned me of its approach, and I decided not to risk it, pushing Charlie onto a tree branch and following after him. We waited until the bear's shadow passed underneath the branches we perched on, and its grunting bulk gradually moved away. "Would it eat us?" Charlie asked. I was glad to hear that he didn't sound frightened, only curious. "Probably not," I said. Bears have much better things to eat on this island than skinny boys, and that one has already had a feast.
I smelled the blood, Charlie said. It probably had some rabbits like us.
A rabbit's nothing but a mouthful to a big old grunter like that, I laughed. He's been at deer or elk or maybe some of the fat silverfish that live in the ponds and streams. All those kind are much better food for a bear than us. But a bear is something that kills, and being something that kills, the best wisdom is to avoid its teeth and claws.
Are you something that kills? Charlie asked.
Nod and Fogg say that you are. They say no one's killed more pirates than you.
I've lived here a long time, I said. Peter's lived here even longer. I shifted uneasily as his bright little eyes studied me in the moonlight. Both of us knew quite well that I hadn't answered the question. I'd killed more pirates than I could remember, and for longer than I could remember. The pirates hated Peter, but they hated me more, for I was a plague to them, a plague that cut away their best and youngest mates. No older pirate was quick enough to face me, so they sent their bright things to try to take me. But no bright young man, for all that he has the strength of a man, was as fast as a 12-year-old boy, and I had experience on my side, though I didn't look it. You'd think that after all these years of losses to us, the pirates would choose another island when they wanted to stay in port. But they returned to ours season after season. One time, long ago, I asked Peter why they kept coming back.
"Because they want to know why we never grow up, silly," Peter said and cuffed the back of my head. "They think we have some special treasure that keeps us young, and they want it."
I frowned at him. "If they want it, then why don't they ever go past the beach near their ship?"
"They think they'll catch one of us when we come a-raiding," Peter said.
I snorted a laugh, and Peter smiled at me. And when he smiled like that, it was just the two of us together, brothers forever. Charlie's voice brought me back to the woods and the dark, his voice and the fear in it.
"Will I have to kill a pirate?"
"Not if you don't want to," I said. "Not if I have anything to say about it, you won't."
"I don't know how to fight," Charlie said.
"You're not the only one," I said, thinking of the other new boys, the ones who'd never handled a sword or a knife. "Just stay with me and you'll be fine." I hopped off the branch and reached up for him, and as I set him on the ground, I decided. Peter wouldn't like it, but I wasn't going to let Charlie anywhere near the pirate camp. I was going to tuck him up in a tree or a cave like a baby in a cradle and keep him well away from any fighting. If I was lucky, Peter wouldn't notice.
Except Peter notices everything.
There was always a first time, I reason. He might be so busy with the raid that he wouldn't trouble to keep track of Charlie, though since the little boy was almost always attached to my sleeve, that was unlikely. Charlie's silence told me he was worried about the pirates, and the joy had gone out of the adventure in the woods. "Too damn little," I thought for the dozenth time that day. "Too little for all of this." We emerged from the forest right at the bottom of the cliff path. The boys up in the cave had a fire lit, and the smell of burning wood and meat had led us to them for a good mile before we reached the cliff. They were having a raucous time of it, too, screeching and laughing and jumping about. "They're having a jolly time," I said, smiling down at Charlie. He stared up the path at the leaping shadows and beyond, into the cold white eye of the moon. He didn't seem to think it was very jolly out there, and his fist wound into my coat again. I detached him gently. "You have to go ahead of me. There's not room for us side by side." He stubbornly rewound his fist and shook his head.
"I don't want to."
I felt the first stirrings of impatience. "You have to."
"I don't want to," Charlie repeated.
I deliberately peeled his hand out of my coat and pushed him toward the path. "You have to. We can't stand here playing about all night." He wriggled away from my hand, shaking his head, his mouth set in an obstinate line. "No!" I didn't know whether this was about Peter or Nip or that he was afraid of the dark or the cliff path or what. I just knew that I wasn't of a mind to deal with his nonsense. I didn't care about Charlie's reasons at the moment. I just wanted him to mind me. I was angry and let him see it. "You have to go up there. If you don't, I'll leave you here." His face went shocked and white. I could have smacked him and hurt him less, I reckon. "The duckling," he whispered. "What about the duckling?" "The bloody duckling didn't listen, didn't mind," I said, starting up the cliff path and leaving Charlie there staring after me. Peter was right. I didn't do them any good when I tried to take care of them. I wasn't Charlie's mamma, and it wasn't down to me to be one. If that stupid little boy fell in the crocodile pond, or got eaten by a bear, or wandered into the fields of the many-eyed, it was no never mind to me because he wasn't my problem, not my responsibility. Peter was the one who'd wanted the little brat. Let him look after Charlie. Let him. My steps slowed, then stopped. I was about halfway up the path. The raucous shouts of the boys in the cave practically inside my ear, they were so loud. I looked back. Charlie stood at the base of the path, his face upturned in the moonlight, tears streaming from his eyes. He appeared frozen, his muscles locked, unable to follow, unable to do anything but wait. Wait for me to return for him. I sighed, and my anger went out with that sigh. Peter chose the boys, yes, he did. But he didn't care for them. He didn't look after them. He didn't teach them how to find the best mushrooms or how to string a line to catch a fish. He took them to fight pirates, but didn't teach them how to do it properly so that they wouldn't get killed. He didn't show them how to skin a deer for clothes or comfort them when they cried in the night or bury them when they died. I did that. Peter was good for showing you the quickest path to the Mermaid Lagoon, and for picking teams in battle, and for sneaking through the pirate camp at night, stealing shiny things that he stored in a hollow in our tree like he was an overgrown magpie. Peter was for fun, for play, for adventures. Me, I kept his playmates alive, even when he didn't want them any more. Like Charlie. I went back down the path, sure-footed, despite the narrow track and the crumbling edge that promised a hard bruising fall, if not a broken bone. I wasn't sure Charlie would forgive me, but as I approached, he broke into a run and leapt at me. I stumbled a little until I had his weight, saying, "Hey now, you'll make us both fall," but not in a gruff way. Charlie's wet face pressed against my cheek, and he said over and over, "I'm sorry, Jamie, I'm sorry. I'll listen. I'll be good. I'm sorry, only don't leave me." I patted his back and told him I wouldn't. And I wouldn't. I was better now. I'd look after him. I wished I could promise him he wouldn't be hurt. But you can't make promises like that. Not on the island. Not in the other place. Boys got hurt. They fell. They bloodied one another's noses. They called one another cruel names. Sometimes they got stabbed by pirates. I wouldn't lie to Charlie. But I could promise not to leave him. Chapter 4. Just before we crested the top of the cliff, I set Charlie on his feet and wiped his face. My hands were dirty and left streaks on his cheeks. "Can't let the others see you like this," I said. "Boys aren't supposed to cry," Charlie said. "My brother Colin said so. He said only babies and girls cry and I'd better quit it. That's why he sent me outside." "Outside?" I asked. I was only half listening until then, my head cocked to one side to see whether I could hear Peter's voice amid the chorus of noise coming from the cave. I wanted desperately to beat Nip and Peter, to prove somehow that Charlie was worth more than Peter thought he was, to show that Charlie wouldn't drag him down. I didn't hear our fearless leader, who usually liked to be the loudest. Charlie spoke again.
Yes, he put me outside because he scared me and I was crying. Mama told him to watch me, only he didn't. He hid in the cupboard and knocked on the inside of the door and pretended he was a ghost, and then he jumped out and scared me. He scared me and I cried, and he said, "Shut it, I don't want to hear your noise, only babies cry like that." And when I didn't stop, he sent me outside and shut the door. I hit the door, and I cried, and told him to let me in, but he only made a face at me from the window and went away. Then I stopped crying, and he still wouldn't let me in, and I was thirsty. I was going to get a drink from the pump, it's in the square, only I got lost and couldn't find it, and I was crying and so thirsty. Then I got tired and stopped crying, but I couldn't find home again. Then you and Peter found me and said we could have an adventure, and I couldn't find my way home, so I came with you.
I stared at him. This was the most words Charlie had ever said in one go, and they confirmed the great wrong I'd suspected. We hadn't saved Charlie from an unhappy home or a life in an orphanage. We'd stolen him from a mamma who'd probably cried every day he was gone, just like the mother duck in Peter's story. I don't know what I would have said or done then, though my first inclination was to scoop him up and take him home straight away. Damn Peter and his pirate raid. But just then a sound reached me. A chittering, clackety sound. A sound that shouldn't be so close to the bear cave, shouldn't be so close to this part of the island at all.
"What's that?" Charlie asked.
"Shh," I said. "Stay close and do as I say." He didn't ask any more questions. Maybe it was my manner, or maybe the memory of me leaving him at the bottom of the path. But he listened. Charlie huddled close to my legs as I strained, trying to figure where the noise was coming from. It wasn't from the forest or the path we'd just climbed. I was certain of that. It hadn't somehow gotten around behind us. Anyway, that didn't make any sense. They wouldn't come from that side, the forest side. They'd come from the other side of the cave. There was a downhill track there that went along through the foothills that bordered the plains. The many-eyed lived in the plains, and usually stayed in the plains. Lately we'd been finding one or two on their own, probing into the forest like scouts. We'd chase them off when we found them there, using our slings to throw rocks and scare them away. It was easy to scare them when we were in the forest, for we could climb trees and stay safely out of reach. I'd proposed more than once that we should just kill them if they came in our territory, that it would send a message to them to stop sniffing about that part of the island. But Peter thought they would see a killing as an act of war, and that it would invite an angry invasion of many-eyed upon us. Peter knew the island best of us all, so we listened, and didn't kill them. But now one was nearby, far from its home in the plains. The many-eyed nested in the very center part of those plains, and that made it easy to avoid most of them. One had never come as far as Bear Cave, mostly because they didn't seem to like climbing. Or so we thought. The mountains were the one part of the island where there had never been any sign of them. The clicking and chittering drew closer, and I was certain now that it was coming up the track. The track we would take the next morning to go down to the pirate camp. I hoped there was only one. Maybe a young one that had gotten lost and just needed to be encouraged to go back to its proper home, far from us. The boys in the cave shouted and screeched, and seemed entirely unaware of what was happening. I tugged Charlie toward the cave. I had to get him inside and hidden, for he would be nothing but a little sweet meat to a many-eyed. We moved quickly and quietly across the flat rock outcropping that led to the cave. My heart pounded in my chest. I wasn't scared for myself. I was scared for Charlie and the other boys, the new boys especially. They'd never seen a many-eyed and might panic, and that would make things harder when I wanted them to be safe. If Peter were there, he might say they needed to learn on the run. I said that left a lot of dead boys, and that was wasteful, even if he didn't care about any of them. But Peter wasn't there. I was.
Charlie and I rounded the lip of the cave, and at once I saw why they hadn't noticed the noise or anything else. Somebody had killed a deer. Nod, by the look of it, for he wore the deer's head and part of its skin over his shoulders. They'd made quick work of the dressing and were roasting the deer's haunches over the fire. Somewhere along the way, they'd all stripped down to their bare skin and painted themselves with blood. They were dancing and jumping and whooping around the fire. I thought, Peter will be sorry to have missed this, for Peter loved it when the boys were wild things. It tied them to him better, made them forget the other place, made them belong to Peter and the island. Then I thought, all the blood will bring the many-eyed right up to our door. It might have already. I put my fingers between my teeth and whistled, a sound that echoed into the depths of the cave and made Charlie clap his hands over his ears. All the boys stopped, staring at Charlie and me in the entry. "There's a many-eyed coming," I said. For a moment they paused, and I thought how vulnerable they looked, without their clothes and their weapons, and how the fresh blood looked like paint, like a dress-up game, not like they were the mighty warriors they thought they were. Then Nod pushed off the deerskin and ran for his breeches, and his sling, and his knife. And Fogg did too. The other boys who'd been on the island for a time followed, their eyes reflecting various degrees of fear, grim determination, or panic. The new boys, Billy and Terry and Sam and Jack, milled together, mostly confused. "What's a many-eyed?" Terry asked. "A monster," I said, pulling Charlie into the cave. I brought him over to Del, who could be trusted to be sensible. Besides, I wanted Del to avoid making himself any sicker. If he coughed out blood, it would attract the many-eyed right to him. "You stay here with the new boys," I said to Del. I put Charlie's hand in Del's free one, for he had just straightened up holding a small metal sword. He was proud as the devil of that sword, and well he should be, for he'd taken it out of a pirate's scabbard while the fool slept on the watch. Del's brow wrinkled, and I could see in his face the question he wanted to ask. "Why do I have to stay here and nanny?" "I need you to look after them," I said, "in case the many-eyed gets past me." Del gave me a look that said he thought that was unlikely and he knew what I was about, but he rounded up the new boys anyway and pushed them to the back of the cave. Charlie looked slightly panicked at being separated from me, but he went without protest. "You two," I said, pointing to Kit, Jonathan, and Ed. "Help Del look after the others." The other three looked relieved. That left Nod, Fogg, Harry, and me. I wished Peter were there. Me and Peter, we could take one many-eyed by ourselves, and then I wouldn't have to worry about the others. Harry wasn't any too bright, but he was strong and followed directions without question, which was why I'd kept him with me. Nod and Fogg were terrified of the many-eyed, but they were also brave as anything. They wouldn't run from the fight. I indicated they should follow me out of the cave. We crept to the mouth, listening, me in front. Then Harry, Nod, and Fogg. I had my dagger in my left hand, though I didn't remember taking it off my belt. Now that the boys were quiet, the clicking of the many-eyed's fangs seemed incredibly loud, filling up all the empty space, crawling inside our ears and down our throats and into our hearts. It was the sound of something hunting, something hungry. The echoing quality of the sound made it impossible to tell whether the creature was still on the foothill track or just on the other side of the cave wall, ready to turn in on us at any moment. I stepped forward, and my foot slid in something slick. Unlike Peter, who preferred to go barefoot, I wore ankle-high moccasins made from elk hide. The bottom of the right one was now coated in deer offal I'd trodden without noticing. That gave me an idea. "Fog," I whispered, as he was now standing in it himself. "Pass me some of that." Fogg obligingly scooped up two handfuls of guts and carried them to me. I took the unidentifiable mess from him and peered around the cave wall. The many-eyed was just clambering on the rock shelf. Its full body hadn't cleared the edge yet. One of its hairy legs was testing the space, ensuring there was room for the rest of it. For a brief moment, I contemplated rushing the beast with the other boys, grabbing hold of that leg and pushing it from the side of the cliff. Its bloated body would burst on a protruding rock, and the many-eyed wouldn't be any the wiser about why one of its own had died. But Peter would know. Just because he wasn't there wouldn't mean not finding out, and he didn't want to be at war with the many-eyed. He'd made that very clear. He would happily be at war with the pirates, and he didn't mind. No, he even encouraged, in the form of battle, fighting among ourselves. But we were not to start trouble with the many-eyed, no matter that they were a monstrous and unnatural scourge that was clearly, to my mind, creeping farther into the forest every day. Soon enough, I thought, we'd have a war with them, whether we wanted it or not. There was something about the many-eyed that stirred a primal sense of wrongness in me, though they were nothing more than part of the island to Peter. Their fat, round bodies, covered in shaggy hair and swollen with the blood of their meals, their legs, eight of them, far too many, and the strange bent way they moved, gliding and awkward at the same time. They were alien. Everything a boy was not. "Harry, get a torch from the fire," I said. I squeezed the deer organs in my hand. The wet flesh slid between my fingers. Harry darted back in place behind me, holding a long, thick piece of wood blazing at one end. "Right," I said. "I'm going to toss this mess to it and see if it will take it. Harry, you use the fire if it seems like it's getting too close. Nod and Fog, you spread out behind me with your slings. If it gets going past me or Harry, then you take out its eyes with rocks." Even Peter couldn't object, I reasoned, if a many-eyed fell over a cliff and died because it was blind. At least he could object, and usually did, loudly, when not getting his way. But we wouldn't have actively killed the thing, and therefore would have followed the strict letter of Peter's law. My own inclination to wipe the many-eyed off the island would, too, be at least partially satisfied. With my knife in my left hand, and the deer guts dripping through my right, I jerked my chin toward the opening of the cave. The others followed me. I heard Harry's breath coming in short, sharp pants. The torch he held dripped sparks on my neck, but I couldn't cry out. The many-eyed had cleared the cliff face and was fully on the rock shelf. There wasn't very much space between it and us, and it seemed bigger to me than any many-eyed out in the plains with the wide blue sky above. Here the darkness pressed down, and the rocks and cave made it feel like we were trapped in a closed room with the thing. The deer guts in my hand reeked, making my eyes water. The many-eyed gave a long hiss when it saw us, and pounded each one of its eight legs on the ground in a kind of ripple, starting with the back leg on each side and circling up to the front leg. I'd seen many-eyed do this before, when they were scared or uncertain. I didn't flatter myself that it saw four boys as a threat, but all many-eyed fear fire, and Harry's torch was a good size for threatening. Harry moved to my right side, while Nod and Fog stayed behind. If it seemed like the creature would get around Harry and me, I wasn't going to wait until Nod and Fog took out its eyes with slingshots. I was going to grab that torch and chase it off the cliff. Peter's rules be damned. A giant monster wasn't going to eat all the boys, even if Peter did think one was as good as another. The many-eyed took some tentative steps towards us, hissing through its long fangs all the while. I judged that it was a juvenile, not fully grown for all that it seemed so big on the rock shelf. The moonlight showed clearly that it didn't have the silvery grey fur that developed in adulthood, nor did it have the extensive scarring that resulted from the merciless fighting for food. There were always more many-eyed than could possibly be fed, given the astounding number of babies that spilled out of their egg sacs. Only a young one, I reasoned, would have strayed so far from the rest of the pack or been so foolish as to climb a cliff. Really, it could have fallen off a precipice and died before it ever reached us. I wondered what had pushed it on to even try. And a juvenile would be distracted by the deer meat and frightened by the fire, or so I told myself. I tossed the offal at the many-eyed as far as I could throw, and as I'd hoped, the deer gut skidded past its legs, close to the edge of the cliff. It clicked its fangs together, and a little venom dripped off the edge of one, sizzling on the ground. You don't want to get that poison on you. It burned right through to your bone. I knew. I had several small round scars on my left arm where a many-eyed had splattered me years before. The many-eyed looked toward the pile of blood and guts. I waited, hoping it would accept the offal as an offering and leave. That's what an adult would do. Its dozens of pupilless eyes rolled back and forth above its fangs, almost like it was considering. Harry raised the torch threateningly, and the beast took two or three steps backward, resuming its hissing. The creatures didn't have any kind of noses that we could see, but they seemed to smell things all the same. It turned its bloated body toward the offal. I blew out my breath, only half aware that I'd been holding it. When I was on my own, there was no fear, only the sure sense of what needed to be done. But when the other boys were around, especially new ones, especially Charlie, I found myself worried on their behalf, and part of my brain always taken up in their safety. Which I suppose was one of the reasons why Peter told me to stop babying them. He never worried about them, not for a minute. Nor about me, come to think of it. Suddenly the many-eyed turned back towards us, having ignored our offering, and made a high-pitched sound like a scream. Fog gasped behind me and swallowed it just as fast, and I knew he wanted to scream too. I stepped forward with my left foot and jabbed the knife in my left hand toward the many-eyed. I wasn't trying to hurt it yet, only to make my intentions clear. It reared back, front legs in the air, and screamed again. Far away, far, far across the plains, came an answering cry, so faint I almost thought I imagined it. It's calling for help, I thought. And then I imagined dozens of many-eyed, crossing the plains, climbing the cliff, surrounding the boys and wrapping them in silk, and dragging them back to their colony to feed their babies. No, I said, and charged it. I hadn't given any indication to the others what I would do, and Nod or Fog, sometimes it's hard to tell who is who, shouted after me to stop. His voice barely penetrated the tidal roar of blood in my ears. I knew the belly was the most vulnerable part, and I didn't want to be within biting distance of those fangs. The many-eyed shape made them seem awkward, that fat body balanced on all those legs, but they were quick as hell and could turn faster than you could blink. They couldn't twist, though, so if I got behind it, I might be able to slide under it before it realized what was happening. At least that's what I intended. "Harry, get that fire as close to it as you can," I shouted. And as I said that, the many-eyed charged at Harry, right at the fire, screeching all the way. For a moment, we all froze, for none of us had ever seen a many-eyed run toward fire before. I thought, "This one is broken. It goes to fire instead of away from it. It climbs mountains." I needed it to be broken, to be different from all the others, because if it wasn't, then the many-eyed were developing new and frightening behaviours. And those behaviours didn't bode well for us boys. Then it knocked the torch aside with its leg and bit down on Harry's shoulder, sinking its fangs into his chest. Harry screamed, screamed and screamed, and his scream unfroze my brain. Blood spurted and venom poured, burning his skin wherever it splashed and spilling into his muscles and bones. The belly, I thought, and knew I wouldn't have another chance. It was distracted by Harry, but it wouldn't be for long. Maybe I could still save him despite all the blood and the poison and the way his scream was fading away like he was waving goodbye. I ran behind it, skidding to a stop near its stinger, and leapt forward with my arms in front of me, belly down, sliding underneath its body. It smelled of foul death there, so rank I nearly choked on it. I flipped to my back so I could see the bloated mass shaking above me as it killed Harry.
I slid the blade into the many-eyed's belly, jerking the blade parallel to its legs to make a long slice in the thick, hairy skin, just like I did when I slid down a pirate ship's sail holding onto the handle of my knife. The many-eyed reared back on its legs, and there was a terrible rending noise as its fangs tore free from Harry's body. I rolled free just as hot liquid poured out of the slash I'd made. It stung where it touched my hand and arm and shoulder. I wasn't quick enough to escape without getting